Today, on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about Nintendo's Super Metroid. Chris Bastian, and we're going to be talking about what I consider the third pillar of the Nintendo franchise, Super Metroid, or the Metroid series in general, or at least the first three games. As is typical for this podcast, I have brought on one other expert who can speak with some authority on this subject. He's all the way over in New York, and his name is...
Scott Ross.
Hi, Scott. Welcome back.
How's it going?
Pretty good. We missed you on the Mega Man X podcast.
Oh, I know. Oh, Mega Man. Love me some Mega Man.
Okay, Scott, so in case someone's listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you? Or specifically, what type of gamer are you?
I love RPGs, action RPGs, story-driven games. I'm really all about, story-driven games. Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Battlestar Galactica, your typical geek, you know.
I just watched the Viper versus the Mountain, and that was a pretty intense fight, so. Scott.
Wonderfully done. Wonderfully done.
Let's not drift into too much Game of Thrones. Let's talk about some Metroid here. Is Metroid in your top five franchises?
Absolutely.
Top three?
Absolutely.
Really?
It is.
Can you perhaps tell me just then, is it in your top three games?
It is not.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, none of the Metroid games are in my top three games, but they are in my top 10.
Okay.
The Metroid franchise is my number three franchise.
I'm curious what the other two are.
Well, Zelda is my number one.
Okay.
And Mario is my number two.
Over Final Fantasy.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
I just learned something today.
You did. Final Fantasy has let me down recently.
Aww.
So, Final Fantasy holds, like, two Final Fantasy games are in my top 10. So, you know, but... And also, Final Fantasy as a franchise, they're all so individual. They're all so separate, you know. Every Final Fantasy game is a different realm, a different world, different characters. When you talk about a franchise and you talk about an intellectual property, you talk about Mario, you talk about Link, you talk about Metroid. These are characters that are in every game, and it's difficult for a developer to take, you know, a character that you've already made a game about and make an entirely different game and not make it repetitive and not make it the same thing over and over again. And, you know, and Final Fantasy, they just basically make a new game. So I don't consider Final Fantasy to be, you know, an IP or a franchise. It's just a, you know, the same studio made a different game about a different world with, you know, RPG elements to it. So...
Hmm.
So don't knock my love of Final Fantasy, because I'm a huge Final Fantasy fan. That's all I'm
that's
saying.
A discussion. That's a very interesting discussion, but we'll have that some other time.
Okay.
My final question to you, in all of the Metroid games, where does Super Metroid rank?
In all of the Metroid games, Super Metroid, you can't do that to me, man. I refuse to rank games cross-platforms, because Super Metroid is... was a staple, was the, in my opinion, the fourth best game on the Super Nintendo, competing with the likes of Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger, and Mario Kart. We're talking heavy hitters, and Metroid for me was number four. Metroid Prime 3 Corruption is just a beautiful, beautiful, fantastic game. The motion controls, you know, everyone was really worried about how well they would work, and they work so incredibly well.
Yep.
And it was such a fantastic game. And Zero Mission, which redid the first one, Zero Mission, Oh man, that game is fantastic. I mean, that game for me is on par with Super Metroid, but you can't compare them because that game had so many other games to steal from. I mean, Zero Mission and Fusion stole elements from Symphony of the Night. Symphony of the Night stole everything from Super Metroid. So,
all right. You know. Save it for the discussion, Scott. Save it for the discussion. Cool. Well, hold on to your thoughts and feelings. I have invited on some pseudo-outcasts, or maybe we would call them pseudo-experts. We're not really sure, but one of them is sitting in the room here with me, and his name is...
Mark Soloff.
Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you. Ohayou gozaimasu.
Oh, you went to Japan. Scott also went to Japan.
Nice. We should swap stories.
Ohayou!
That's it? That's all you guys...
I've been sitting on it. I just wanted to say it, because it's Nintendo.
All right, yeah. So, Mark.
Yes.
It's been a while since...
Okay, sorry, I'll stop.
Mark, it's been a while since we've had you on. So in case someone's listening to you for the first time, what type of gamer are you?
Gamer?
Yeah.
Currently, I have Xbox 360. Don't really have the Skrilla to get the Xbox One. I enjoy shooters. I enjoy RPGs, but I've never gone into JRPGs. I was a big fan of like the KOTOR series.
Nice.
Thank you. I'm a huge Batman fan, so all the Arkham series I've been a real fan of.
Some God, people would argue games. Arkham Asylum is very much like Super Metroid, but we can talk about that later.
All right.
That's why it's so good.
True. Were you playing games circa 1994?
Yes.
What were you playing back then?
I guess Nintendo and Super Nintendo. I was a fan of the Mario series. Mario 3 was my jam.
Cool.
I played Metroid as a kid, but that was like, I was young enough that I was mostly watching my older brother play it.
The original Metroid?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he would give me a turn. I like rented Super Metroid and I thought it was awesome, but I did not buy it.
Awesome. Hold on to your thoughts and feelings. We'll discuss the original Metroid before we go into Super Metroid. I have another pseudo-expert / pseudo-outcast. He's over in Virginia, and his name is...
Pete Foose.
Hey, Pete. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Hello, everyone.
You were just on the Mega Man X podcast, so...
Yes, I was.
Real quick synopsis. If someone's listening to you for the first time, what type of gamer are you?
Gamer, primarily role-playing games, Mass Effect's the best game on the 360 PS3 platform, but any game that is story-driven. So I'll play Halo, I'll play Borderlands because they have neat stories to go with it, but I also like those games where you collect a lot of stuff, like Diablo, World of Warcraft, and, you know, give me items.
Okay, cool. Same question to you. What were you playing, like, circa 1994?
94, if you've heard me before, you know that I was a Genesis kid, Sega Genesis kid. So I did not have the exposure to most of the Super Nintendo games that everybody talks about. I didn't get exposed to them until later. And while I did trade for my Genesis for Super Nintendo with a friend of mine, so I was able to play some Super Nintendo games like Super Mario World or Chrono Trigger. Absolutely Chrono Trigger.
Nice.
And Final Fantasy VI.
At least you're playing the really big ones.
Exactly. I played the staples. I played the necessary, well, what I always thought were the necessary ones, but Scott's going to tear me a new a-hole.
No, you've already listed the top two Super Nintendo games, so far you're doing okay.
All right. So, yes, I've played a lot of great Super Nintendo games, but I was a Genesis kid, so I didn't get exposure.
And you said you played the original Metroid, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
But... And I played a bunch of Metroid 2. I can't remember if I beat it or not. I know I wasn't a fan.
Did you have a Game Boy?
I did have a Game Boy. I never had the Metroid for it. Metroid wasn't a series, like, it wasn't what I was begging my parents to buy me.
Okay.
I wanted Castlevania. Hmm. I wanted Mario. You know, Metroid wasn't on my radar.
Okay, cool. Well, like I said to Mark, conveniently, we will talk about the games leading up to Super Metroid for just a bit. And then, I'll be curious to get your insight on all that. So my complete and total outcast, the person who has theoretically no experience with the Metroid franchise, is here today, and his name is...
Tom Brown.
So, Tom, let's learn a little bit about you since you're the total outcast. What type of gamer are you currently?
Well, I mean, mostly television. I mean, not even movies. Used to be movies, kind of gaming. Really, I kind of get a game 2 years after it comes out and play the crap out of it, and then get bored with it before I even beat it because I kind of get the sense of it. I didn't even finish Skyrim. I got so far. I spent over 200 hours in Skyrim. I never finished the game. I just got bored with it.
Yeah, me too.
You know what I'm saying?
The exact same thing. Same thing happened to me.
I've been doing that a lot with games, and then even finishing a game's not that fulfilling because there's always an expansion you can buy, and that's kind of turned me off to gaming in general.
I definitely agree with you, Tom. Like, if a game is too long, that's actually a huge strike against it for me.
Yeah.
Because I like to be able to finish my games, so.
I just want to make one comment to the world listening. That whole system of these games that kind of never end, you keep adding things. There is one company who just still doesn't really do that, and that's Nintendo.
You're right, Scott.
You're right. I love having you on the podcast,
Scott.
He
takes up the torch against no one who wants to argue. No one wants to argue. We all agree.
I just want to no, that wasn't for the panel. That was for the world
at large
who doesn't have a Wii U and is not playing Mario Kart 8 right now. That is for
I
the world.
I played Mario Kart 8 over the weekend. It was awesome.
It is unbelievable. Anyway, this is not a Mario Kart 8, but I'm just saying, like, the fact that the Wii U is not selling, it's stupidity. And anyway, continue,
Scott. Yep. Just to speak to that, I hope to do a Nintendo versus Microsoft versus Sony podcast one day. You can be my Nintendo champion. So
Okay, amazing.
That's awesome.
So, Tom.
Just to answer your questions, I think that as a gamer, I was mostly like Pete with Diablo, PC gaming a lot more than console because I never really was up to date. I also had a Genesis when I was around 14, and that was old at that point. Like, there were so many other things coming out, and I was like, you couldn't keep up with the Sega. I mean, they kind of ruined every Sega kid because you had to have five more systems. I mean, how can you do that?
You had to get the CDX and the Sega CD with the 32X, and then they had the Sega Saturn, and then they
had the wisdom at 14 that my old games will become obsolete and I'll have wasted money, you know, and that, you know, so I just kind of stopped and I played computer games instead. Anyone want to talk about Heroes Quest, a knockoff of Kings?
Yes.
Oh, I love Hero Quest. That's
what great. A great game. I loved it. It was so funny. It had like little inside jokes and often Monty Python references just to give you an insight into the programmer's mind.
I've only played Hero Quest the board game, so I'm not familiar with the computer.
It's King's totally Quest. Different. Quest, right? It's totally different than that.
Okay.
There's King's Quest, yes, but it's a knockoff of King's Quest.
Yeah, Heroes Quest. Yeah, it's funny. It's a good game. I'm right.
Really, you know, cute. What game has a really interesting quest? Metroid.
So, Tom, my final question, my total outcast. You have not played any of the Metroid games, correct?
No, I think I tried to play the one that came out on GameCube, and I just couldn't manage it.
Okay. All right.
This is too much.
Well, to my outcast, to my pseudo-outcast experts, remember you are allowed to question, challenge any thoughts at any time, or if there's something that we talk about that you want to spend more time on, please let me know. And those of you in the listening audience, this podcast is going to primarily be about the original trilogy of Metroid 1, 2, and Super Metroid. We're not really going to talk about the Prime games or other M, so that'll be a separate podcast for another day.
I guess I'll throw out all my notes on all of those games.
No, you won't. You're just going to put them in your big binder of notes. So, cool, guys. Let's talk a little bit about the first Metroid game and Metroid 2 before we jump into Super Metroid. So in order to talk about Super Metroid, I guess we should talk about the games that lead up to it, namely Metroid for the NES and then Metroid 2, The Return of Samus for the Game Boy. I had both a Nintendo and a Game Boy as a kid, and I don't remember actually if I owned the original Metroid. It came out, I think, 1986, and just for a little information for those listening, the rumors that I've heard and some of the research that I saw was that Nintendo, after releasing the brilliant Mario Brothers and the brilliant Legend of Zelda, wanted to create another franchise that kind of married the two. Married the exploration of Zelda with the action of Mario. And that's kind of where Metroid came from. Designed by Gunpei Yokoi, the man who went on to design the Game Boy and several other notorious things for the company.
Like a killbot, or
he invented the Virtual Boy.
Oh,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
Screen system.
But that's a discussion for another time. And then they gave it a science fiction setting, just because that was one genre that Nintendo hadn't really played with at that point. So that's kind of like a quick nuts and bolts where the original Metroid came from. Scott, as my other expert, do you want to add anything to that? Is there something that I didn't mention about the original Metroid right off the bat?
Yeah, that actually the feel of the game, the music of the game, the producers, all of them were inspired by the movie Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien. In fact, that's why they named one of the main bosses Ridley. And also, it was supposed to be, you know, you're dropping this planet, you're alone. And the opening sequence, like, you turn on the Metroid game and that creepy music starts, and you kind of feel like you're in the middle of space, and you kind of feel like you're all alone, and what are you going to do? You're up against the world, and it's horrifying. And throughout the gameplay, especially when you get to the end and you finally see those Metroids, the game is horrifying. Especially the first one, because of how freaking hard that game is. It is horrifying, especially if you're like, oh, I got the wave beam. Oh, no, a Metroid. Oh, I'm screwed.
You know, yeah, like, just to speak to that, like, the Metroid franchise is unusually dark for a Nintendo franchise. It actually might be Nintendo's darkest franchise. I know they helped produce Eternal Darkness for the GameCube, but aside from that, like, Nintendo usually doesn't make, like, dark, atmospheric games. Obviously, Mario, Zelda, Pokemon, none of those really fit into that mold. Mark,
yo,
you played the original Metroid.
Yo.
Did you kind of get that same vibe of, like, horror or atmosphere?
Yes, definitely. Like, I think the thing that delivers Metroid, at least the first one, from being too scary for kids is just the limitations of the graphics at the time. Because, like, you're looking at, like, an 8-bit, fairly two-dimensional Metroid. But there's, like, veins in that thing. It's somewhat translucent. It sucks the life energy out of people. It attaches to them. You've got all sorts of weird monsters, like, hanging from the ceiling and rocketing down towards you with their drill-like wings.
And then they explode.
Yes. And it's, like, just the color palette. There's a lot of darker shades to it. You're never out in the sunlight. You're always underground, running around. So there's a dark ambiance to it, and the music is amazing. The music helps build that feeling. I watched a video in preparation for this podcast, and the commentator on Metroid said that it creates a sense of solitude. Like, you are not there with your fun little fairy buddy that gives you directions. You know, you are all alone against monsters in the darkness. And so, like, it's not too scary for kids because the graphics aren't that good, but if they were realistic graphics, it would be really scary.
It'd probably be more along the lines of maybe Dead Space. Like, if they...
Yes, similar,
I mean,
feel.
I'm
without
glad,
the zombies, though.
Yeah, yeah. I would... Yeah, yeah. Pete, you played the original Metroid. What are your thoughts about that?
As a kid, I was not exposed to a lot of horror movies. So when a game comes out and it tries to be... Now, I didn't see Alien at this point. All I knew of the game is that I had all these other Nintendo games, and they were bright and wild and colorful. And Metroid had been out for a while, and when I finally got around to playing it, even on the Nintendo, graphics had taken an upstep, so I wasn't too interested there. I didn't like the game control. It was really difficult. There was no way to know what I was supposed to do next, and it was frustrating. But I sat there, and I played the entire game, and I got to the end, and with some help from friends, I was able to beat the boss at the end. But I just... It was... The whole ordeal was frustrating. Just as a kid, it was all frustrating. I wasn't having a good time jumping through these dungeons. It was always a chore. It was always a chore to get the next item. It was a chore to find more missiles. And it was just like, ugh, I have to go all the way across the map to this place. Now I have to go all the way across. And there's nothing carrying me from map to map except the promise of more violence that I'll lose.
Pete, I definitely see your point. Like, I feel of the older Nintendo, or the older 8-bit games, Metroid has not aged well, and it is part of it is design. The controls are not that great. Part of it is the limitations of the system, because I think Metroid was a very ambitious game on very limited hardware.
But that being said, I do have to give major, major props to what Metroid introduced into gaming. Because, you know, with the 8-bit systems, this is when they were making up most of the tropes and cliches we love about games now. They were creating them. And the whole having a map where you explore and getting items to unlock different portions of the map, that was neat. And by that, they created an entire genre of games. Not only that, but you can have different genre of games that follow this pattern. And I think that a pattern which was perfected in Symphony of the Night, Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
No, those are all good points. I was going to say, the original Legend of Zelda, I feel, is still pretty playable nowadays. It can be very obtuse, but you could get your way through that game without ever looking at a FAQ. The original Metroid is really, really, really a tough game, and not necessarily by good design. So, I mean, I think that's kind of the reason they made Metroid Zero Mission, which is essentially a remake of the first game. Yeah, all of the points that you have brought up are, I generally agree with, and I think are great points. Tom,
I want to speak to that. Before you go to Tom, I want to speak to that to give a little bit of defense of this original Metroid game. Let us all remember that this game came out in 1986, and this game was extremely huge, and this game required patience. Games nowadays, you have guides and you have this. This game required patience that you find where the missiles are, and the exploration is unbelievable in this game. All the different worlds and the different musics and the different colors and all those things that happen in this game. This game is absolutely still playable. I've played it three more times recently when the GameCube came out. I actually played it on the Nintendo back in high school again, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I was able to play through it and complete the game so without a guide. Like, I think we're overreacting to the point to say that this game's unplayable. I don't think that's the case at all.
No, I didn't say it was unplayable. I said it was frustrating.
I said it's unplayable, and I think
also,
I might stand by that.
Patience, yes, it does require patience. I was 6 years old when the game came out.
Well, no, that's not...
I didn't have patience.
I was speaking to the point that Chris said that he thinks it's unplayable, and I just disagree with that. That's all.
I want to throw out a hypothesis here. Like, for me, like, you know, obviously this game borrows a lot from Alien, and I think that the atmosphere of this game is very, very clear and very specific. And I suspect that if you're hooked, if your imagination is captivated by that world that Samus inhabits, then the wonkiness inherent in the game is forgivable. But if you're not intrigued by that particular world, then the flaws in the game become illuminated, and you feel like, I don't want to play this because I don't want to be in this world.
I'll give you that, Mark. That sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Tom, do you have any thoughts or observations from what we've talked about the first game so far?
Yes, I've been soundtracking this podcast with a YouTube video of the Super Metroid soundtrack, and it is quite eerie. Like, I was shocked. I didn't know what to expect, actually, but from the title theme, it's creepy. It's, like, actually disturbing. I would be, if I had played this as a kid, I could imagine really getting taken in by this game.
Hold on to that, because I feel Super Metroid does in spades what Metroid does in just a little bit. Let's quickly talk about Metroid 2, which was released for the Game Boy.
So maybe I didn't play Metroid 2. I didn't play any Game Boy version, so I was wrong.
Yeah, released for the Game Boy. Again, I think I'll make the same point. Like, this is another game where I think it's overly ambitious for the hardware. There were some concessions that they made in the design that I think work really well, but then there's other aspects of the game that I don't think very well. Like, Samus is beautifully detailed in this game. Like, they make her actual character sprite really large because she's on a tiny Game Boy screen. But the problem is, she's on the tiny Game Boy screen, so, like, the amount of real estate that you actually see on the screen is really, really small. So suddenly enemies are on top of you far more often than they are in the original Metroid, which some people would argue that really adds to the sense of, you know, claustrophobia. It can also be kind of frustrating at sometimes. Scott, you played Metroid 2, right?
I have, yep.
What'd you think about it?
I definitely agree with you. Metroid 2, they obviously had a problem with the Game Boy. There's not much real estate on the Game Boy, and you need to be able to create a Samus that you can see and enjoy, and not a tiny little dot of a character to keep the same feel of the original game. So I think they did a great job of using what they had. The Game Boy screen, if you guys remember, is ridiculously small. It's super, super, super tiny.
It's only really good for Tetris.
Yeah. My actual issue with the game doesn't have anything to do with the crampness. My actual issue with the game is the monotony of the battles. Most of the battles, maybe it is because of the crampness, they're just very similar. Every battle is kind of the same. You get this one little Metroid thing, and it flies right above you, and you kind of jump up and shoot it. And like every battle is almost the exact same. Those are my qualms. However, this game is vital, and if this game hadn't have happened, it wouldn't have made Super Metroid one of the best games ever made. So let me be clear about that Metroid 2 was absolutely vital. It introduced the crouch. My God, Samus can crouch. If you played the original Metroid and you got those little things that are walking on the ground, you can't shoot them if they're on the ground because you can't crouch. Not only that, you can't jump above them and shoot down. Well, thank you, Lord, that in Metroid 2 they fixed that. You can crouch and you can shoot down. Now, these are things that we all take for granted in 2014, but back then, you know, not the case. The other thing that it did is...
This was the first game with crouch and shoot down?
Yeah. No.
Well, crouching.
Crouching for a character. Well, I think...
Wow, that's amazing.
Castlevania, you were able to crouch.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I'm talking about specifically for Samus. Samus. And then being able to shoot down, thank you. And then the other thing, which is the reason why the game is so important. On the original Metroid, when Samus got the Vera suit, a very popular equipment, she changed color from like a white to like a purplish thingy, okay? So you could tell that she had a new suit. Well, the Game Boy was all black and white, so they couldn't do that. So they, okay, what do we do? Well, this time when she got the Vera suit, it basically added an equipment that hooked onto her shoulders. And that image of her with the hooked on shoulders is now the image that we have in every Metroid game. That is the Vera suit from now until every other incarnation of the game.
If I could jump on that in part of my research, and I don't know if this is legit because I got it from a YouTube video. The video I saw explained the cramped quality of Metroid 2 in that same Verisuit reason, that they couldn't change the color of the character to indicate that it had a power-up, so they had to add more to its model. They added the shoulder pads. And to make that clear, they had to make Samus bigger so you could see the detail of the suit. But by making Samus bigger, they restricted the amount of level space that she could occupy. And so it was sort of a trade-off because Game Boy had no color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a quick note before we move on, you know, there is a fan remake of this game
that
you can get. And it's beautiful, and it's fantastic.
I was actually just about to mention that, Scott. It's pretty impressive.
Where can you get this fan remake?
It's called Another Metroid 2 Remake, because people have tried to do it several times. This guy has been working on it for like 5 or 6 years, and it's just the one guy. And every few months, he releases a new demo with additional levels. He's pretty far into the game. I hope he'll release like a full version pretty soon. But you can play like 75% of the game right now, and it is a gorgeous remake. It's a gorgeous remake, and it's totally free. So if you just Google that,
they remade Metroid 2 in color, and so it looks like Super Metroid.
He essentially upgraded it to like Super Metroid / Metroid Zero Mission graphics. Like it's just really beautiful. I highly recommend Googling it, finding it, downloading it. It's free until Nintendo sends a cease and desist order.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Super Metroid. So Super Metroid, and this kind of jumps back to that atmosphere, moody atmosphere that you were talking about, Tom. You load the game up, and the screen presents, you know, it says Nintendo, and then it says Metroid 3, and then it kind of just pulls back as you see, like, the Metroid larva that you rescued at the end of the second game in the center of a scientific facility, and you see all the scientists are dead, laying on the floor, and then the title screen comes up with Super Metroid over top of that. And this really just kind of ambient, creepy music is playing. And that's the intro to the game. Like, that's what you first see when you boot it up.
So wait, the Metroid larva, is the Metroid, is it a good thing? An animal?
Well, yeah, we never explained what Metroids are, or even the plot of the first game.
No, you didn't.
I'll give it a quick little context, just so you know what the universe is, Tom. In the first game, it's essentially, there's a thing called the Galactic Federation, which is a huge, I guess it's supposed to be like the Federation from Star Trek, like it's a huge space organization. They discover this life form called Metroids that have amazing energy producing capabilities. They also can drain energy, like that's how they feed. The Galactic Federation believes they can use this creature for good purposes. Well, before they have a chance to do anything with it, space pirates appear, kidnap the Metroid, and take them back to their home planet, a planet called Zebes. They send the military in, that doesn't work, so they hire bounty hunters, and Samus is one of the bounty hunters that they hire, and her mission is to go there, destroy all the space pirates, and destroy the Metroids. So that's essentially the plot of the first game, and you go through and you do all this.
Why destroy them?
Because it's been deemed that they're too, I guess it's been deemed that they're too dangerous.
And they're a weapon.
That they're a weapon at this point.
They are a weapon, yes.
So they're better off annihilated.
Yeah.
They're not sentient. They're like big bacteria.
They're kind of sentient. They are
definitely sentient.
Yeah. So the second game.
Okay.
Let me explain the second game. This will help you out a little bit. So she wins the first game. Yay. Defeats all the space pirates.
Yeah.
The second game, now that the space pirates are gone, they send the scientific research team to the homeworld of the Metroids to gather more to continue research. The science team is lost. So once again, they hire bounty hunters to go and see what's happened, and they hire Samus to go and effectively eliminate all the Metroids, because apparently they're just too dangerous to control at this point, and should they spread across the galaxy or get off the planet, that's really bad. So your whole goal in Metroid 2 is to wipe out a race. Which is kind of creepy.
Yeah. It's not okay.
And you have a counter on the screen that tells you, like, how many Metroids you've killed or how many are left, and it keeps counting down. And it's very similar to Aliens in that not only are there multiple Metroids, they're different type of Metroids because they evolve. And eventually you kill them all, and then you confront the Metroid Queen.
Metroid 2 is like reverse Pokemon. You have to find all the types and kill
them. Gotta kill them all.
So Samus goes, she kills all the Metroids, and then after she's killed the Queen Metroid, as she's leaving the planet, she comes across a final egg, and a little hatchling is born, and she decides to not commit genocide, and she decides she'll save this last one, and maybe there's hope for the species. So she takes this little
Ender's
Metroid.
Game much?
Yeah, Ender's Game much.
Well, yeah, because the Metroid flies around her, because the Metroid thinks that Samus is his mother. That's very important.
Yeah, they look just the same.
But the Metroid doesn't try to eat her. It doesn't try to take her energy. That was the
thing. She's a terrible bounty hunter, is basically what it boils down to.
Well, career woman,
yes, you're
going to
commit one genocide.
This is her job.
So she takes, and then now we, that brings us to Super Metroid. And the Super Metroid actually opens with this monologue by Samus where she talks about being hired and does the first game, and then she talks about the second game and finding the larva. And she drops the larva off at a science station, leaves and is gone for like 10 minutes, and then the science station is attacked once again by fucking space pirates. So she turns, hauls ass, turns around, heads back, and confronts the pirates and travels back to their homeworld, planet Zebes, and finds out that they have in fact rebuilt their whole facility, and you have to go through that game world, and that's essentially kind of the plot setup for Super Metroid. Yeah, whew, that was a lot.
That helps.
The opening to Super Metroid blew me away as a youth, because you go in and you're investigating this lab, which was just decimated by the space pirates, and then suddenly, like, out of the shadows, like, it's a platformer, it's 2D, But they have this thing where Ridley appears behind you. You see its eyes first, and then its body. And then it flies towards the camera, like towards the player.
Yep.
Which was, like, that was, like, a thing I think they did in Mario 3 or something.
Super Mario World. Super Mario World. With Koopa.
Yes.
Yeah, on his clown car.
Yeah, and that was so cool. And then the station is going to self-destruct, and you have 60 seconds, and there's a timer, and the station, like, tilts. So you're running on diagonal platforms where they used to be straight. And so you're looking at this level, which you've just walked through, but it's different now as it's falling apart and steam is coming out. And it's really just like, it was really innovative.
Is it a first person game?
No.
No.
Nope.
It's a side scrolling
platformer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
And that's the first 5 minutes of the game. Then you get to Planet Zebes and start your hunt. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, just the way Mark has described it, like, this game opens with a bang. Like, it really, really... I love the intro and the ending to this game. Scott, let me jump over to you, since you're my expert here. First, like, initial thoughts. Did you play this when it came out?
I did.
Okay, so what do you want to say about Super Metroid?
First thing I want to do for Super Metroid is to thank Super Metroid, because without Super Metroid, I wouldn't have realized that I have a color deficiency.
Oh.
Let me explain my color blindness, which I know that the three of everybody but Mark can laugh about, because everybody helped me defeat Metroid Prime, because it also affected me at the end of that game. So, halfway through the game, you know, the game with this game, green doors you use super missiles on, yellow doors you use power bombs on. Well, I'm sitting at a door, and I'm shooting all my super missiles, and it won't open. And I'm like, what is going on? Shoot, 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 this door won't open. And I'm like, Dad, why won't the door open? Is there something wrong with the game? He's like, well, what are you supposed to use on those doors? I was like, well, all the green doors, you use the super missile. He's like, that's a yellow door. I was like, that's not a yellow door, it's a green door. It's like, you're kidding me. So the green and the yellow doors in this game looked identical, revealing that I, Scott Ross, am colorblind. And it doesn't mean that I see the world in black and white, it's just that some shades of some colors, literally, I can't discern. But the funny thing is, if you tell me that something is a certain color, my brain will compensate and I'll see it as that color. Really weird. Huh. Anyway, thanks Super Metroid for that.
Yeah, fuck you Metroid 2 and your black and white.
It could have been solved so many years earlier if Game Boy had just been in color.
Right. There's so many amazing parts of Super Metroid, but just the addition of a lot of the cool weapons, the addition of the grappling beam, the addition of the speed dash. I think one of the coolest parts of the game is when you get one of the indigenous creatures of the planet to teach you how to use the energy of the planet to do the speed dash. That is so awesome. It's such a weird part, because you're like in this depth, and there's like these underground plants growing, and this kind of ostrich-looking creature teaches you how to do it. Oh, so cool.
So Tom, we're kind of dancing around it, but it's kind of, I want to talk about the design of the game, because I really feel there's not, especially at the time, there were not many games doing this. Like, I feel Super Metroid really is the perfect blend of the Mario action with the Zelda exploration. You can move through Super Metroid really at your own pace, and the game really isn't that long. You can if you know what you're doing, you can easily beat it under 2 or 3 hours. In fact, you get the best ending if you beat it quickly. But if you don't know what you're doing, it's probably like a 6 to 8 hour long trek, but it's not a very long game. The only game I can think of that it was a contemporary at the time that even remotely did this was Castlevania 2, because Symphony of the Night had not come out yet.
Yeah, Castlevania 2 was that open world exploration. God, that game was so hard.
Yeah, it was really hard, and it could have been a lot better, but we're not talking about that.
Yeah, anyway.
So. Yeah.
I'd just like to add one thing to get us starting on another conversation. I think Metroid is such an amazing franchise in all these games because Samus Aran is a girl. And not only is she a girl, she is a bad-ass girl who will kill you. She's the number one bounty hunter in the entire universe. She's equipped with just deadly weapons. She's strong. She's powerful. powerful, you know, emotionally strong. She doesn't depend on a man. She doesn't depend on anybody. And she just goes out and wrecks havoc and kills space pirates. And can you think of any other female, you know, game characters before Samus Aran that were so powerful? I honestly can't. But she's the flag waving, you know, for women in video games.
You know, that's a good point, Scott, because I was also thinking when you asked if there were any others, even since then, even the powerful female characters in games, 90% of them, they're just, you know, they're sexual objects. And of course, as a teenager, I greatly appreciated that. But still, I mean, when you talk about things from an actual social feminist perspective, Samus is a badass, and Samus isn't feminine. Samus isn't girly girl. She's not walking around in her underwear killing vampires. She's decked to the nines in a solid power suit, to the point where you can't even tell she's a woman. She, you know, it's business first. It's not about looking good and sexy and entertaining. It's about, okay, I have pirates to kill.
And you know, they actually meant to do that. They meant to not, in the first Metroid, you didn't know that Samus was a female unless you beat the game in under certain time, and then at the end she took her suit off and you went, oh wow, it's a girl. Like, even in the instruction manual, it refers to Samus as a he in the original English. And in the Japanese, it didn't mention male or female. But it was supposed to be a surprise to find out that the person that you've been kicking ass with was a girl.
I've got an observation I'd like to make about Super Metroid. I owned Super Metroid when it came out. I bought it. I played it. I really enjoyed it. I did not put it on the pedestal or think it was, like, the best game I had ever played. That feeling really didn't apply to me until later when I played it, like, 10 years later. It was one of those games that always kind of hung at the back of my mind of, like, oh, I played that in 1994. It was really good. I'd love to play that again someday. And then when I did, the masterpiece that it was just unveiled itself to me. And I don't know why it didn't hit me at first the same way. I will say, the first Metroid sold very well. I don't have sales numbers for Return of Samus, but Super Metroid sold pretty abysmally in Japan, and it sold pretty decently here in America because of good marketing. But the Metroid franchise has never been a huge seller in the Nintendo pantheon. It's definitely not a Mario or a Zelda title. It's not even a Pokemon title. I guess that kind of the question I want to throw out to everybody, or to those that have played the game, why do we still talk about this game 20 years later? And this is the 20th anniversary. This is the 20th year for this game. This game, Super Metroid, often appears on, like, top 5 lists of greatest games of all time, greatest design of all time. What is it about Super Metroid that is just so damn good?
I'll start with that. It's the ambiance of the game. I mean, it was, like, especially in the first one, and even in the second one, in the third one, you're by yourself, you're in this uncharted territory, you're killing all these creatures, and gosh, in the original Metroid, when those Metroids show up, they just kill you, and they kill you so quickly, and then you have to figure out a way to finally be able to beat them, and it's the same thing. And in Super Metroid, the exploration, the different, every different part of the planet, you know, the Norfair, Brinstar, all those different parts of the planet and the underground caverns are so well done and so expansive. Oh man, it's just a completely fabulous game, and it's that feeling of, I can't get through this area. I can't get, what do I need? Oh, you gotta get the super missile. Ah, I gotta get the super missile. And then you get the super missile and you finally get to go through that green door that you've been staring at since the beginning of the game, and you go through the green door and it opens up this whole, a new area. Oh man, like, that was just fantastic. One of the first games to do that. You know, it was definitely, the game was still linear, you know, but it had the illusion of not being linear, because, you know, the you didn't have to go through level 1, level 2, level 3, you know. It was I'm in this open world, I can't get through this door till I go through all the way to this side, and I gotta go all the way back to get through that door that I saw at the beginning. And I really liked that.
Pete, Mark, Tom?
Personally, I think that, and we were commenting about this before we started the podcast, we were asking each other, is there a good Alien video game or Aliens video game? And the consensus was, not really. And I think Metroid succeeds in being the good Alien video game. It's not, it's derivative of the Alien franchise, but it's a good game, and it's similar to that world. So it evokes some of the things, like the Chozo statues are like the derelict space pilot that they find in Alien.
There is like a certain like level of archaeology to the game, like exploring old ruins and seeing the new built on top of the old, or seeing the old run down. Something you mentioned, Mark, that that occurred to me. You mentioned the first game was entirely underground. There are parts of Super Metroid that are on the surface of the planet, but I realize even when you're on the surface of the planet, it's cloudy overhead.
It's raining.
It's raining, or it's cloudy, or there's, I don't know, creepy acid snow falling or whatever.
Yeah. No sunshine.
Yeah, no. There is no sunshine on this world. And that goes back to the ambience that you mentioned, Scott. This game is just so damn ambient for a 2D platformer, and just does it really, really well. And Scott, you also mentioned the organic structure of the world. The world of Zebes, the world that you explore, very much like Arkham Asylum, is like this kind of small sandbox that you slowly, more areas reveal themselves as you gain different abilities or discover new abilities. But the world is just so well constructed organically that it makes sense. And I think it makes sense even more than perhaps like A Link to the Past. Like the world, like A Link to the Past is a beautiful world, but parts of it feel a little fragmented. Super Metroid doesn't really feel fragmented to me. Like it feels like just one humongous level that you slowly just gain more and more access to. And that's really impressive that they pulled that off in 1994.
I want to add that the storytelling in this game is done not through, you know, there's not many cutscenes, if you will. I think there's an opening thing that she talks about, but mostly it's visuals. This story is told through visuals, and it's clear as a bell, the story of this game. It is clear as a bell. You know that this Metroid is on this planet. You know that this Metroid is getting bigger. And then the ending of this game is one of the most gratifying endings of any game. And I will say that this has a more gratifying ending than Link to the Past. This game has a more gratifying ending than Chrono Trigger, in my opinion. Like, this ending of this game is absolutely any and everything. It's heartbreaking. It's exhilarating. It's unbelievable.
I half agree with you, Scott. Now, when we talk about the ending, I'll tell you why. I mostly agree with you, but there's one thing about the ending I really don't like.
All right, talk about that.
Pete, Tom, we've kind of hijacked the discussion. Do you guys have anything you want to ask, or any comments or observations that you might want to make?
I think the term space pirate is hilarious.
That is the technical term.
In space. I mean,
I get it. Yeah, okay. The concept is pretty clear.
Space banditos.
The point that I wanted to make, it's something that just occurred to me about the sales figures for Metroid and Super Metroid, and it made me think, video games at the time, there were, you know, there was one kid who had them, and a bunch of people would gather around, and everybody would play a game. When you have Metroid, you have to devote the 6 to 8 hours to go through, you have to hammer through it, you have to gather the items, and it's not conducive to sharing the controller. Because I, you know, whenever somebody shared the controller with me, it's like, all right, now I have to figure this game out. I have to learn this game. And there's so much to the game, and I didn't start it from the beginning. Even worse, if I started from the beginning, they'd be like, oh, you'll figure it out. And then I'd run and die. It's like, and then my hour or 2 hours at my friend's house would be over, and then I'd go home and go, why on earth would I want to play that game? So it's not conducive to group playing something like Mario would be.
That's a fantastic point, Pete.
And on top of that, to have the game, that the subject of the game be so isolated and lonely. So it's a lonely game to be played by yourself about a lonely character who has no friends and no allies and is stuck in a dark hole. And you're like, oh, God, I don't want to be depressed at 7 years old.
What's your question, Tom?
Do you think that perhaps the popularity of the game suffered because it was a lead character that was female?
I have no clue.
Because, I mean, I could see that happening.
No, absolutely not. Because a lot of people didn't even know that Samus was... When you looked at a Metroid game cover, it wasn't a girl on it. It was Samus Aran in full suit.
So children were dressing up like Samus, even the, you know, boys and girls. I don't know.
I think after the first game, it was pretty wide knowledge that you were playing as a woman. I think I can only speak to a theory. This is complete conjecture, but I know around the in 1994 in Japan. Japan was really in the hay market of its Japanese role-playing boom with Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy. So this type of game was not as popular in that region, because the first Metroid sold pretty decently there, but again, Super Metroid did not. I think it just came down to a cultural tastes. And the game is very, especially for the time, very Western-themed game. And I don't mean like Western, like, you know, Dust Bowl Western, but, you know, since it takes a lot of pull from Alien and Aliens and genres that Westerns, that Westerners are more familiar with, I think it appeals to us naturally more.
If I could say something about Samus's gender, I think the advantage that Metroid offers for players of all genders is that she's, most of the time, at least with the early Metroids, she's covered up by her suit, which is inscrutable. She's a hybrid of Ripley and Boba Fett. And so if you're a little boy and you have a problem with playing as a woman, you can imagine that this blank avatar, this spaceman, is like you, is a boy. And if you're a woman or a girl and you're like, yeah, I know underneath there's a girl. It just looks like a robot now, but I know I'm playing as a woman. So you can project yourself onto the blank slate of Samus's suit.
I have two questions kind of spawned off of Tom's question that I want to ask and throw out to everybody. So my first question to everybody, would we be talking about Super Metroid nearly as much if Castlevania Symphony of the Night had not come along?
I think that's a weird statement. I mean, they're both amazing games and both separate games, and one game stood on the shoulder of the other game. If Symphony of the Night was never made, we would still be talking about how Super Metroid is one of the best games ever. I mean, when you look at top 10 lists, you'll get Super Metroid at 5 and Super Metroid at 6, but you will get Symphony of the Night at number 1. We, you know, it's one of the few perfect games that are out there. But I believe that Castlevania stood on the shoulders of what Metroid did, but then also added RPG elements, which is why that is a fantastic game, because not only do you need items to access different parts of the castle, you can build up your character, you can equip different weapons, you get an item every time you kill a monster, you get a different sword. There are 6,000 swords and 6,000 armors, and it really goes to that RPG aspect, where Metroid is an action game. The only RPG element is that you collect, you know, energy canisters, you know, and you do collect weapons, but you don't build up per se. You know, you don't fight more enemies to gain more levels, and then your beam gets stronger. You get the long shot. You get the plasma beam. But, you know, it has elements of RPG, but not like Castlevania.
You know, you mentioning that series of events makes me think of the similarities between that and Mega Man. Now hear me out. Metroid all takes place on the one map, and you have to get the certain abilities to unlock other abilities. But if you separated it all into 8 different maps, you would essentially get Mega Man. You have to go and kill the boss and get an item so you can unlock this other area. And I'm just saying, I'm not saying they're the same game. I can see similarities.
It's interesting you say that, Pete, because I read a couple of reviews back from 1994, and a couple of reviewers cited Mega Man X, which had been released near the same time. And some of the reviewers said that this is the direction Mega Man should have gone in. I don't agree with that. I'm glad Mega Man didn't go in this direction, because I think Mega Man X is a fantastic game. But that point was brought up. So, yeah, it's just fascinating that you say that. Tom, I think something else that really went against Super Metroid is it was released the same year as Donkey Kong Country. Mm-hmm. Compared to Donkey Kong Country, Super Metroid, at least in static photos, doesn't look that great. Like, Super Metroid looks amazing in motion, but if you're looking at it in pictures and magazines, it does not look super awesome. And Donkey Kong Country looks phenomenal, whether it's still or in motion. So that also might have been something that kind of devoured the sales of Super Metroid.
Bad timing.
Yeah, they say that it was bad timing and bad luck. Because when Metroid Prime came out for the GameCube, it sold... I mean, Metroid Prime, I think, is the most selling Metroid game. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. Otherwise, it wouldn't have made two more games within, like, 6 years' time span.
Yeah, so. when the Metroid Prime came out... And the GameCube was struggling, too. This is during PlayStation's heyday. You know, the GameCube wasn't selling anything. And Metroid Prime came out, and it blew up. That being said, once again... Mario Sunshine sold 6 million copies, and I'm a huge Mario fan, and I didn't even like that game very much. But Metroid only sold, I think, 2.3 or 2.6 million or something like that. But, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Donkey Kong Country came out, and they immediately made two more sequels to that game. Super Metroid came out, and then it was 8 years until we got Metroid Prime.
Yeah. Well, that also had a lot to do with the person who was in development. He made Virtual Boy. It failed. He left the company. And then, sadly, he passed away in a car accident.
Yeah.
So it had a lot to do with that. And then they had to... And then Miyamoto, you know, hooked up with Retro Studios. And then they, you know, they got together and they rebooted it with the Prime series. But there was a little bit more than just, you know, bad sales. It was a whole other series of unfortunate, weird events.
Pete, have you played Symphony of the Night? Just to jump back to Symphony real quick.
Oh, yes, I have. Yes, I have. Well, I love that game.
How do you respond to my comment? Would we look at Super Metroid? Would it be in the zeitgeist as much if Symphony of the Night had not come along? Or
that's interesting. Because I agree with what Scott said. I don't think you can have Symphony of the Night without Metroid, and I guess Super Metroid at that point. Now, if Symphony of the Night had not been so popular, I don't know if Super Metroid would stick as much in the mind. But, you know, Metroid Prime helped bring Metroid back in everyone's consciousness.
True.
So I think it would have been longer before people remembered how cool Metroid was. I think it would have been more of a shock when Metroid Prime came out if you didn't have Symphony of the Night.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's entirely conjecture and... theories, but it's curious how you guys respond to it. So, Tom, my outcast over there, how you doing?
Okay.
Do you have any? You sound depressed.
No. This is interesting. I'm learning about this game. I love that it's a. I didn't know that it had anything to do with the Alien movies, which I love. So that's cool.
I mean, it's definitely derivative of. It's not obviously.
It seems referential.
It is. Especially like Metroid 2, when you see that, like, with the alien queen, the Metroid queen, there are a lot of paying homage to Alien and Aliens. Do you have any questions so far, Tom?
Not right now.
Okay. Well, one thing we haven't mentioned too much that I kind of want to throw out there, Super Metroid, and I think to a lesser extent, Symphony of the Night, are both very popular games for doing speed runs and sequence breaking. Where you can go into areas you're really not meant to if you kind of know how to physically maneuver the character right. And then, of course, the speed run, which is trying to get through the game as fast as you can. And there's YouTube videos of people speed running. I mean, there's YouTube videos of speed running many different types of games, but there's a lot for Super Metroid to see who can beat the game. There are some people who can beat this game under an hour. I don't know how you do that.
Watch the speed run. It's impressive.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's like 45 minutes, isn't it?
Really?
Yeah, I think it's on YouTube. Speedrun. Yeah, it came up.
Speedrun Super Metroid. It's either 45 or it's like a minute 12 or an hour 12 or something like that.
I mean, it's like an Olympic event of people just training, trying to get their time down just by a few seconds. It's crazy. I've never done that. I never play the game for a speed run, but it's there if you want to do it. And then, of course, sequence breaking. I wonder if there's sequence breaking, too, to do it. That's interesting.
A higher level of nerd than me.
So, is there anything we haven't touched on that you guys want to talk about so far? I think we're nearing the hour mark. We can go for a little while longer, so.
I'd like to talk about Zero Mission real quick.
Well... Before we do that, Scott, can we talk about the ending of the Super Metroid?
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh.
Why is this so amazing?
Can we spoil the ending?
I think it's 20 years.
It's been
since
20
the first
years. Scott, do you want to set up how the ending happens?
All right, let's set this up. Okay, so you're going through Planet Zeebs, and you've got all the equipment, you got all the items, you're all ready to go, you're all maxed out, and then you get to this part that seems oddly familiar, and you realize that not only have they rebuilt Zeebs, they have resurrected Mother Brain and rebuilt her little, you know, white metally thing with those little red posts that like are shooting spirally beams and little circles at you, and you blow through each one. You get to Mother Brain, and she's got this giant glass thing, and you shoot her. You do the same thing. You're like, all right, say I know how to do this. I did this in the first Metroid, and bam, 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 boom, you kill the brain. All right, you're like, yeah, I won the game. No. No, you didn't win the game, because what you didn't know is that the brain was just the top of this super giant dinosauric thing that Mother Brain actually is.
It's all very right? like Geiger-esque. Like her body design looks like something, like if H.R. Geiger made a 16-bit game, this might look something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, now, not to mention, you've been going through this whole thing, and there's a couple of monsters that kind of look like Metroids, and you haven't seen any Metroids yet, and you're like, you don't know, are Metroids coming? You keep wondering if one's going to come. Well, then that giant Mother Brain just starts, bam, killing you, and, like, zaps you, and it's, like, starting to kill you, bam, 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 and it's got you down to, like, one. Drains all your energy but one energy, and Samus goes to a knee and is, like, glowing, and she's, like, dying, right? The thing's about, literally, Mother Brain's about to kill you, and right when that happens, the little larva has now grown to a full-grown monster Metroid. It comes and hits and grabs the top of Mother Brain and starts sucking all of the energy out of Mother Brain. Suck, 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 suck. Mother Brain shakes and shakes and then drops to the ground. The Metroid then comes over to you and you're like, oh my god, what's going to happen? Is the Metroid going to kill me too? No. The Metroid gives you all of the energy from Mother Brain, fills you up, but while he's doing this, Mother Brain's not dead yet, and Mother Brain gets up and starts shooting at the Metroid, and with one last hit, shoots the Metroid, the screen goes gray, and you hear a scream, a digital scream from the Metroid as the Metroid larva dies. Oh, now Samus is like super powered up with these mega beams, and then you fight the final battle, and you finally kill, you know, Destroyer. Same thing happens, self-destruct goes, and you gotta go and get off the planet. Oh, man.
So I wanna, here's my point about the final battle, Scott. I think narratively, it is, like, brilliant. Like, it ends with, like, a huge just cannon fire. I think gameplay-wise, Mother Brain is a pretty easy final boss. She's really not that hard, especially for how empowered you are at that point. Because I felt Bowser was a really good challenge in Mario World, and Ganon is a really good challenge in A Link to the Past, but Mother Brain, she's honestly not that hard. And especially after a certain point, it's really hard to lose that fight. Yeah, that's my only qualm with it. Like, I wish she was a better final boss. But again, narratively, story-wise, it is fantastic. It's literally just her as a final boss that I have a qualm with. That's it. That's all I was going to say.
Why do you hate everything, Chris?
I don't. I swear. But the escape sequence where you have 3 minutes to get off the whole planet before it explodes is amazing.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so great.
I think that's why I didn't have a problem with Mother Brain not being that much of a challenge, because that's not where you died. Not only did you have to get out of the top, you got to get to your ship, which was different than the first game. The first game, you just got to get to the top. Yeah. This game, you got to get all the way back and in your ship. And it's kind of shocking, too, because you don't think that you need to go that far.
And then you realize it's not done and you have to keep running.
The clock's still counting down on you. And
so wait a minute. Does the ostrich alien that teaches you the super speed, does that get killed in the planet destruction?
You can save it if you want to, but it takes time to do it.
That's so awesome.
And it's totally optional. So,
wow.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. You can save the ostrich.
Always save the ostrich.
That's so awesome.
Something I want to throw a question out to you, Scott, and see if you respond to how you respond to this. I feel Metroid does a phenomenal job of empowering you as a player. Especially just as you develop more abilities and gain different equipment and item, as you go back to areas, you can just plow through enemies. And I mean, this literally happens with the screw attack, which allows you to just jump through enemies that gave you a hard time when you first set foot on the planet like 4 hours ago. So it feels really great and really empowering. Do you get the same sense of empowerment with like A Link to the Past? And if not, why?
Well, here's the thing. That's a yes and no question. I'll bring up Link Between Worlds, because Link Between Worlds has an even more disparity of how powerful you are at the beginning of the game than how powerful you are at the end of the game. But what Link Between Worlds does is it still keeps introducing harder monsters and even harder monsters and even harder monsters. And that's great, and that's awesome, and it keeps that challenge high. But there is something unbelievably gratifying about Metroid working so hard, you know, and especially in the first Metroid. Like, the first Metroid, it's just so incredibly hard, and when you finally get the screw attack, you're like, oh, screw all of you guys. Oh, you're all dead now. I like both. I like both in their respective areas, and I wouldn't want Zelda to be different. I wouldn't want, you know, to have, like, Ultra Mega Master Sword, where I kill everything in one hit. I don't know. I don't know if I'd like that as much, but the screw attack is very near and dear to my heart, and it's amazing.
So my outcasts, Mark, Pete, Tom, I kind of want to open the floor. Do you guys have any questions or something that we've talked about that you want to focus on, or...
Is Super Metroid playable enough for me to pick it up and play it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is a reason why they haven't remade the game. Chris said that. There is a reason why there has never been a remake. There doesn't need to be a remake. Doesn't need to be. It's great.
You could argue that Metroid Zero Mission is somewhat of a remake of Super Metroid. It really isn't. It's supposed to be based on the first game. I think Metroid Zero Mission plays just a little bit better. Like, the controls are a little bit tighter, but, I mean, it came after the fact. But I agree with Scott. Like, I think Super Metroid is pretty damn perfect as it is.
Yeah.
Samus is a little floaty in her jumps, but the game is designed around that, so it doesn't feel like an obstacle that you're dealing with, unlike the first game.
You're in a spacesuit, so yeah. You're going to be a little floaty.
And the game is pretty easily accessible on the Wii Virtual Console or other means that I'm not allowed to talk about. So
the Zero Mission, what system did that come out on?
Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it is one of the best Game Boy Advance games. I think I played that game. The Zero Mission, one of the two really cool things about that game is the world changed as you played through it. So unlike all the other places where the map would stay exactly the same, once you fought a mini-boss, it would actually open up. It would actually, like, change the world that you've already been in. And they did a really good job of that. And you had to, some parts actually got really difficult because you didn't really know where to go and you felt like you were trapped. And then you have to go through this thing that opened up because the worm monster broke through this upper wall that you didn't see. And that's where you have to go. The other thing about Zero Mission is I guess I don't want to spoil it. It adds stealth to the game. Later on in the game, you don't have any of your weapons. You have nothing. And you have to hide from these space pirates who will kill you in one hit. And so it adds stealth, and you kind of have to hide and duck and, like, get away until you can finally get your suit back to go wreck some hell. That game is one of the best Metroid games as well. It's a fantastic game.
Do you think Super Metroid graphically holds up, Scott?
I mean, yeah, it's a 16-bit game. It's not the best-looking game on the Super Nintendo, obviously. That was Donkey Kong Country. Mm-hmm. But I don't have an issue with it. I've said this on other podcasts. If anybody has an issue with graphics, don't play it on a large screen. Play it on a handheld device. Play it on the Virtual Console through your DS. You know, play it on a smaller screen. You're not going to notice... you're not going to notice the pixels. You know, if you play it on your beautiful, you know, 60-inch HDTV, you're going to have an issue with it, you know? I remember I played the original, I downloaded Mario Kart on the Wii console last year, and I hated it. And I was like, this is one of the best games ever made. Why do I hate it? And it just, it was just weird. It was weird for me. It was weird to see it so big and so pixelated and not on a tube TV because that's what it was meant to be viewed on. So I think it helps to play these games on a mobile, some kind of mobile handheld.
I will comment that Nintendo's emulation on the Virtual Console is pretty damn impressive. I mean, emulators have been around for years, and they work pretty decently on computers. There's sometimes graphical errors or things that don't display right or text that looks weird. because this is all made by people just reverse engineering in their free time. But Nintendo really, the Virtual Console service is really, really impressive. There are no flaws. There really are no flaws with it. Like, it, that's the best form of emulation I feel you can find right now. And just, I don't know, Pete, if you, if it's easy for you to, like, go back and play a retro game, but if you want a more modern-day equivalent, obviously any of the Metroid Prime games, or, as we already mentioned, Arkham Asylum is very, very much Metroid.
Yeah, I destroyed Arkham Asylum. Yeah. Oh, man.
The one thing I would, the one thing I would say about Arkham Asylum is it doesn't, you don't feel empowered at the end of that game. Like, you feel empowered from the moment you put that game in because you're playing as Batman. So I would say the sense of empowerment is lost a little bit, or it's just developed differently. But I feel that game took a lot of cues from Metroid and brought it more into a modern-day game development setting. So,
Well, I remember you guys playing Prime games, and they were awesome. Beautifully graphic, beautiful graphics, and the story was actually a tangible story. And, yeah, I liked watching the Prime games. They were awesome.
Tom, Mark, do you guys have any questions?
Not right now.
I don't have a question, but I want to make a sort of final comment. The music of these games, like, I can't speak to Super Metroid as much, but the music I remember from original Metroid is really distinctive, and it's really cool. It's, like, very atmospheric and creepy. And I still, like, those themes still, like, bring me back. They take me back to that place in life. There is a band, I think they're called Stemmage, and they have an album called Metroid Metal. I'm not sure if Metroid Metal is the album or actually the name of the band, but they cover all the songs from Metroid, but in a heavy metal version. And I bought it because it's a fun album to listen to because the music is fun. So if you, even if you're not a huge Metroid fan, just check out the music if you're a fan of, like, chiptune stuff.
Just to jump on that, the music in Super Metroid is brilliantly atmospheric, and there are some really amazing themes that play throughout the game and just kind of accentuate the world as you go through it, which I love, and I think it propels the storytelling even further than if it was just, you know, a soundtrack for an area, so... Yeah,
the music in every Metro game, even through the Prime series, fan-freaking-tastic. Yeah,
the music's always been really good. It's like, it's like Castlevania, you know, like it's so connected to the franchise. It's, if it's not there, it's a slam against it. Which Metroid Other M, I felt, had a very just kind of generic soundtrack, and that's why that was a big slam against that game for me. So,
well, there's a whole host of other problems why that game was bad.
Yeah, we won't talk about Other M. So for my outcasts and my pseudo-outcast, have we succeeded in piquing your interest about this game, or...?
I'll play Super Metroid. All right, Scott, I will play Super Metroid.
I will watch How to Beat It on YouTube.
Mark?
I don't have any more Nintendo systems, so I might revisit some old memories on YouTube. I'm not going to hurry out and buy a Wii U and try to get the emulator, though.
All right, fair enough.
Chris, will you poison Mark, please?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Ah! Nice. Cool, guys. Well, let's do final thoughts here, or final observations for my outcasts, if you want. I guess I'll start us off. This is definitely in my top five games. And I think it's a brilliant example of really good game design, storytelling, letting the player experience how to do things rather than how to tell them how to do things. Mega Man X is really good about that, too, and we kind of talked a little bit about that. And it's a shame. I mean, games are so advanced nowadays that there's so many buttons on the damn controller and so many different combinations to do things that the game has to stop and literally bring up text and tell you how to do shit, which... while helpful, really just pulls you out of the immersion, and it's impressive that Super Metroid never pulls you out of that immersion. So if you can find access to it, I would highly recommend playing it.
Okay.
I'd like to, let me first say that Super Metroid and all of the Metroid games are just fantastic, and you got to play them. You know, just the platforming, the action of it, it's just fantastic. The stories are all great, the way they tell the stories. And even in the Prime games, like, you learn the story through, you know, basically archaeology. You learn the story by reading all of the artifacts left over by the Chozo. Like, there's so many amazing facets of this game. But I just want to touch on one thing real quick, because I get angry and so angry when, you know, when people talk about games, like, oh, yeah, games, Call of Duty. Oh, new Call of Duty's coming out. Oh, cool, new FIFA. Yeah, all right, great. And that's the only thing that they know about games. And I would like to remind people of two things. One is that of the top 10 selling games of all time, 7 of the top 10 selling games of all time were made by Nintendo. That's the first thing I would like to remind everybody. Number two, I would like to remind everybody that Nintendo is here to stay. Nintendo is the only company that innovates, the only one, and you should go play Mario Kart 8. I cannot stop playing it. It brings me nothing but joy, and that's all I have to say. I'm down for my soapbox.
Pete, Tom, any final thoughts or observations?
I did just want to repeat what I said at the beginning of the game, is that while I may not be a fan of Metroid, I have to give major props to what it did for other video games and other video game genres. In particular, the whole item gathering to unlock different areas. It's been used in so many games that it's standard now. It is standard to have a game. No matter what game, you're going to find an element of that somewhere in it, unless you're playing, of course, Call of Duty or FIFA. But yeah, any game that's not on rails, you're gonna find, oh well, I have to get the blue laser, or I have to get the bombs, or what have you. And Metroid is a massive, massive part of that.
Cool. Tom, any final thoughts there?
Yeah, just from what you guys said, it sounds like really a captivating game. Especially from the music and just the gameplay. It sounds unique and very interesting, but I gotta say, Zero Suit Samus is not what you think.
Yes, yes, we all know about Zero Suit Samus. It's I don't know a lot of games that really like copy or attempt to emulate this formula. Obviously, Symphony of the Night did, but there's far more Mario and Zelda clones than there are Metroid clones. And it's a shame, like, when I think of Nintendo, I think of Mario, Zelda, Metroid. Like, those are the big three for me. But Metroid really is not, I don't think it's really high up in the Nintendo pantheon anymore, which is a shame, because it's the one franchise that we kind of already hinted at that's darker, and I think if there's anything that can show, like, what Nintendo does with mature storytelling, it's Metroid, and they seem to have gotten away from that recently, so I hope they go back to the Metroid franchise sometime. That would be great. Cool, guys. Well, we're nearing the end of our podcast here. Does anybody have anything else that they're working on or other shows that they want to plug? Anything that our listening audience should know about?
Sure. My band, Bourbon and Bliss, we have a brand new album coming out, which will release August 2nd. BourbonandBliss.com. Check it out.
Awesome.
Cool. Pete?
No, nothing right now, but thanks for the shout-out.
Tom?
Yeah, just check out my website, www.tombrown3.com.
Nice.
Yeah, I have two things. One, a little extra credit for your Metroid consumption. A friend of mine who works for the University of Chicago created a virtual library exhibit on Super Metroid. So do a Google search for University of Chicago Super Metroid, and you can revisit the world of Super Metroid and get some history about it. Also, I have my own podcast, which is a science comedy podcast. It's called Blastro Podcast. So check me out at www.blastropodcast.com.
I was on your episode about cloning.
Yeah, baby.
It was amazing.
It was a nerdy awesome episode.
Yeah.
Worthy of the title.
That sounds fun.
Sounds really fun.
Check it out. Subscribe to it, motherfuckers.
Cool. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming out today and talking about Nintendo's classic game, Super Metroid. I have been your host, Chris Bashan, and joining me today have been
Scott Ross,
Pete Foose,
Tom Brown,
Mark Soloff.
Thank you for listening.